everybody, and welcome to the next episode of Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc., and this week, we watched The Prestige. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel.
It's John.
All right, so did anyone have any, like, general first impressions? Had anyone heard of this or seen it before?
I had never heard of it. Yeah, I knew nothing about this movie going in.
Yeah.
Just by the cover, it's so ambiguous and so vague that I didn't have much to think of. I mean, naturally, the summary popped up at the bottom of the Google Play, Google YouTube. It was in the description, but I didn't have much of an expectation going into it.
Yeah, me neither. I had never heard of this one before. It was a brand new one for me. And again, like, I didn't look at the summary this time when I pulled it up. I just looked at the little poster, and I was like, well, that doesn't help me at all. Like, the poster doesn't look like
it's
anything.
It's ambiguous.
Yeah, so I had literally no impressions. All I had heard is that a couple of our friends really, really loved it and said it was super good, so that got me excited. But yeah, that was literally it. So I came in with high expectations, especially once I saw that so many big name actors are in this. Like,
yeah,
so
it's a true ensemble cast.
Yeah.
It's a powerhouse.
Like, every time a new character comes on screen, I'm like, oh my God, it's that guy from, like, those 10 movies I've seen. Okay, yeah.
I didn't even realize that Tesla was David Bowie.
Yeah, that was David Bowie.
It was David Bowie?
Yeah, that was him.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually have a fun fact about him later. But yeah, because I looked it up and it said in the fun fact, like, blah, 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 David Bowie, Tesla. And I was like, whoa, wait, what? I had to, like, go back. But yeah, so this movie came out in 2006. I thought it was more recent than that. I did not know it was going to be that old. It was directed by Christopher Nolan and written by Jonathan and Christopher Nolan, but based on the novel by Christopher Priest, and stars Hugh Jackman as Robert Angier and Christian Bale as Alfred Borden. And you can watch this by buying or renting it on Vudu, YouTube, Prime Video, iTunes, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, after a tragic accident, two stage magicians engage in a battle to create the ultimate illusion while sacrificing everything they have to outwit each other. So Samuel, tell us a little bit more about our big boy director and the writers.
So, I mean, it's Christopher Nolan. Like, everybody kind of knows a little bit about Christopher Nolan. He's done all kinds of movies. He did Memento was his first big one, Insomnia, of course, the Dark Knight trilogy, this, Inception, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Tenet. I mean, look, he's done all the things, all the big movies. Jonathan Nolan is his brother who wrote it with him. He's written a lot of movies with Christopher Nolan, including Interstellar and the Dark Knight trilogy. And he also, which I did not know this, he also was the co-creator and directs a lot of the episodes of Westworld.
Okay.
Which is a pretty big HBO TV show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the brothers Nolan.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't look up anything about Christopher Priest, but I wasn't surprised to know that this was based on a book when it popped up. I think it popped up at the end and was like, based on the novel by Christopher Priest. I was like, oh, that makes sense. Okay. With how, like, intricate it was, I was like, yeah, okay. Makes sense to me. Oh, side note, everybody. I just feel like I should explain why this might be slightly low energy. We're all real tired this morning. The boys are drinking coffee. I'm not drinking coffee because I don't want to be bouncing off the walls, but we're all pretty tired this morning, so if it sounds a little low energy, I apologize. Sleep was not really a thing for at least one of our boys here who doesn't like sleep, apparently.
I love sleep. It just eludes me like a cruel mystery.
As you sip from that mug.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do y'all have any beginning thoughts before we jump into this plot summary?
So I was right. I looked it up and this is basically the same crew as Batman Begins.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
Because they went straight from filming Batman Begins to filming this, and it's a lot of the same cast members. It's basically entirely the same crew. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a weird sequel.
Yeah.
Who was the actress that played Engineer's wife?
Yeah, so
she looked so familiar, but I couldn't
She's the oldest daughter in Cheaper by the Dozen, my guy. The one who dates Hank. The whole that's what I know her from, at least. She's been in a bunch of other things, but I know her from Cheaper by the Dozen.
I've seen her.
I will get on looking it up.
Cool.
That's your job here, Samuel.
Let me know. I've seen her in something. I just don't remember.
Have you not seen Cheaper by the Dozen?
I probably have. It's just been so long that, like, the image of the movie is eluding me.
I've totally mentioned, like, oh, that kid was in Cheaper by the Dozen. And you went, yeah, at different times. And now I'm, like, realizing that you were just humoring me all those other times.
No, it wasn't that. I guarantee. Look, I still got half a cup of coffee. Don't you start this early in the morning.
I'll do whatever I want this early.
I don't know her from anything.
Not humor.
I don't know anything that you might would.
See,
I've seen her in something.
For me, it's 100% Cheaper by the Dozen, but when I looked at everything else, I was like, I haven't seen any of this other stuff.
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, Coyote Ugly, Lost in
Delirious. Oh, yeah, Coyote Ugly. Sorry,
George and the Dragon, Imagine Me and You, Because I Said So, Beverly Hills Chihuahua, Carriers, Looper, Black Butterfly, Angel Has Fallen, and Covert Affairs.
Please tell me I don't remember this chick
from Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Oh, that'd be so unfortunate.
That's what
because
I'm thinking.
Because I'm sure
on.
She's done so.
She
many
was the main. She was the main actress in Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Yeah, she was the main one.
Oh no, I might remember her from Beverly Hills Chihuahua. I've seen her in more.
Yeah, I saw her and
oh,
thought
good
she
Lord.
Was someone
yes,
else.
I have seen Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah, of course
it's
you have.
It's been a hot minute.
And she's the oldest daughter that dates Ashton
right.
Kutcher.
That's
yeah.
right, yeah.
So that's probably where you know her from, is that?
I think it's a bit of both.
Maybe a bit of both.
Because I will admit, I watched Beverly Hills Chihuahua more than once.
I also watched it more than once, but I also watch everything more than once. I'm a big rewatcher of just everything. I can rewatch movies 1,000 times.
Anyways.
Yes.
Yeah, John, in Scott Pilgrim, when you were like, I probably won't rewatch this one because, like, I've watched it 3 times, I was like, okay, I've watched National Treasure, like, 73 times, so, and I will be watching it again, so, yeah, rewatching means nothing to me. Alright, so let's jump into this plot summary, boys. In 1890s London, Robert Angier and Alfred Borden work as shills, I'm assuming that's like backstage hands or something, for a magician under the mentorship of John Cutter, an engineer who designs stage magic. During
Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm. During a water Michael tank. During a water tank trick, Angier's wife Julia fails to escape and drowns. Angier, devastated, accuses Borden of using a riskier knot, causing her death.
Which when, he did, right?
I'm pretty sure that he did.
He redid the knot.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he, that's the thing that I don't know, is because I don't know knots, I don't know if he started with the double knot, and then he looked at her, and she sort of gave him a look like, don't do that, and then gave her the other knot.
No, because she looked at him and shook her head, well, not shook, she nodded at him, like, do it.
Yeah.
But I don't
know. He looked up at her, she nodded at him, and he then undid it and did another knot.
But because I don't know knots, I don't feel confident saying that I know what he tied. I can tell you he tied a different knot that he started with, but I can't tell you what knot he tied.
They never really answer that question of what knot did he tie.
Well, no, and I think part of it is that we figured it out at the end why he said, I don't know.
He tied the
Langford
double.
Because he probably genuinely didn't know.
Yeah, he tied the Langford double,
yeah.
But he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, but I'm sure he didn't know because there were two. So it was probably the other one who tied it. And then when the other one was asked, he was like, I don't know because I wasn't there. Like, I don't know which one I tied.
Mm-hmm.
So that made sense then. I was like, okay, I get why he doesn't know. But yeah, so when Angier asks Borden which knot he used, Borden claims not to know, and the two become bitter enemies. Angier and Borden launched their own magic careers, with Angier working with Cutter and Borden with the mysterious Fallon. Angier sabotages one of Borden's performances when he slips a real bullet into Borden's pistol during a bullet catch trick, resulting in Borden losing two of his fingers. So this is where the whole thing started. Pretty much the entire movie, and I think right up until the end, I was rooting for Hugh Jackman's character. Pretty much the entire time. Because, like, you know, whole, you know, twin brother things aside, all of that aside, just his sheer, like, not caring about the safety of Julia and just doing it anyway without having practiced it at all, I was like, I'm 100% on Hugh Jackman's side on this one. Like, you know, like, he probably shouldn't have gone to all the lengths he did, but I get why he, like, couldn't let it go until he felt like he was even. And so, like, when he did this whole bullet catch trick, I was like, okay, maybe that's, like, when it's gonna be even. And instead, Borden's like, no way, I gotta keep, like, keep going back at him. And I'm like, dude, you killed his wife. You can just let him have whatever he just did to you and just let him have it and end that way. No, I kind of thought it was ridiculous that he kept going back. At least that was my thought on it. Yeah, no, I didn't like it. I lost my place. Because I kept just being like, dude, like, just let it go. You killed his wife. Like, one way or the other, like, one of you killed his wife.
Yeah. See, I get that concept, but also, like, the wife willingly consented to it.
In a sense, but...
Yeah, she had said that she wanted to do
she
that.
She said she wanted to try
and
it.
She looked at him and nodded at him and said, do it.
Okay, but
he did not kill her. I don't think it would even count as... Legally, I don't think you could charge him for anything.
You could whatsoever. Charge him for manslaughter.
I don't think you could because she consented. I think you could. No, she consented.
But the thing is, well, okay, then that could be argued in court because it wasn't verbal. So that could be argued for days and it wasn't on video. So you can't, like...
Yes, I know no that. Proof I'm of saying anything. I'm saying if you knew exactly what the situation was, you couldn't charge him with anything because she consented to it.
My thing is, I just don't think it would be possible for anyone to know because if Hugh Jackman's
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying in the world of the movie you couldn't charge him with anything. I'm saying today, legally speaking, if that happened and you had the video of it and all that, you couldn't charge him with anything.
I don't know. I think they would find a way. Mm-mm. Because the fact was, when they talked about it in the dressing room, he was like, we can practice it. Like, we can work on it. So that was what I thought they were going to do until he shut it down and Cutter was like, no, we're not going to do that because that's, like, really dangerous. Yeah. And so we're not going to do something that we haven't,
yeah,
like,
and if he had just done it anyway, then yes. But he asked her permission and she said, yes, do it.
I mean, that's extremely debatable.
No, it's not. It's not debatable at all.
It's very debatable.
He started tying the right knot, looked at her, she nodded at him, and then let him undo the knot and retie the other knot.
So you're saying that...
I'm saying she is equally to blame as him, yes.
What I'm saying is that nod right there, that could mean continue tying the knot you're tying or go to the other knot. That's what I'm saying. And if she shakes her head, it could mean stop tying the knot and do the other one.
No, but she let him then tie the other knot and was totally okay with it.
How's she supposed to argue with that? Because she's claimed previously that she can get out of a double. And, like, clearly she's very professional and doesn't want to screw up the trick. So, like, what is she supposed to do?
Danielle, she was very obviously telling him to do the other knot.
But I'm saying in a court of law, they'd be like, so she nodded at you and you didn't ask her a specific question? So, like, I'm saying that he absolutely could be convicted. Because they would be like, okay, she nodded at you. What did that mean? That could have meant 1,000 things.
I think we're focusing too much on the legalities of the make-believe
scenario. That's not the legality of it was a means to an end of me saying that I think she was equally as to blame as him.
I think
it was as much her fault that she died as it was Borden's fault.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with you there, but your whole thing of saying I don't think that he could be tried, no,
again,
I disagree.
That was my way of getting to the point of saying that she was equally to blame as him. Yes, I blame Borden, but I don't think that Borden was a killer.
But
I think it's somewhat unfair to say that Borden killed her.
Well, okay, but I'm not saying necessarily... Okay, so from my perspective, I'm not saying that's necessarily what happened because it was just, like, a horrible thing that went wrong. But I'm saying that Angier didn't see any of the interaction because he was down on the ground.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he just killed her.
Absolutely. So, from Angier's perspective, yeah, Borden killed his wife, and if I was in Angier's shoes, I would probably want to kill Borden too.
Yeah.
Like, I totally get it from Angier's perspective. Again, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's hard for me to completely view Borden as the bad guy in the situation when I don't think it was... Again, she was completely okay with it.
No, I know that she was.
She said that's the knot she wanted to use previously. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to view Borden as the bad guy in that situation.
Yeah, it's just like, I guess my frustration is Borden knows, whichever Borden he is, that the Borden that tied the knot should not have done that, and that he's basically robbed Angier of the life that he had wanted to have. So the fact that after the whole bullet catch thing, when he doesn't even kill Borden, all he does is take off a couple of his fingers.
Yeah, but he was trying to.
He was trying to, but that's the thing, is he came out of it with just missing two fingers.
Yeah.
And so my thing is, like, why did you have to go back and continue this fight? That's my issue with Borden, is that he could have just let it lie.
Could have walked away.
Let them both continue with their careers as they had it, and Angier would have left him alone. He would have been like, cool, I got my revenge on
you. Yeah, I agree on that front. Yes.
Yeah, so that was my frustration with Borden through the whole movie, was I was like, just let him have it. He's never going to feel appeased until he gets the last word. Yeah. Just let it happen. That was my whole problem with it. Borden reciprocates by sabotaging Angier's disappearing bird act, killing the bird on stage and injuring a volunteer from the audience. So not okay.
Yes.
100% not okay. Because at least what Angier did only endangered Borden.
Yeah.
He wasn't endangering another person or creatures. Yeah, he crushed the, like, jammed metal into her fingers and killed an animal on stage, barely hurting Angier. He was, like, kind of hurt, but not really. And he just walks away being like, cool, that was worth it. And I'm like, you just hurt these innocent, like, this innocent woman and this innocent creature. Like, what are you doing? That was completely uncalled for.
That was not okay.
Yeah. So Borden develops a trick he calls the Transported Man, in which he appears to travel instantly between two wardrobes on opposite ends of the stage. Unable to discern Borden's method, Angier hires a double, Gerald Root, to perform his own version of the trick. Which, I love that Root was literally Hugh Jackman, but with, like, a nose prosthetic and, like some discoloration to his face.
He also had, a thing of, like, sticking his teeth, like, he had, like, a massive overbite.
Oh, yeah. He had a big overbite. The scene where he gets up and they're like, he's not gonna be able to pull off being me, because he's drunk all the time and, like, he's an out-of-work actor. And he walks out and he just does it perfectly. Like, he stands and immediately walks up and, like, takes his bow, like, very professionally, and then immediately falls out of it and starts stumbling. I'm like, I mean, he is an actor. That's about what you do.
That's a funny... I love the whole monologue before. It's like, I've been Faust. Yeah. I've been Julius Caesar. Yeah.
And he's just like, you think I can't play you? And he just comes out and does this little arm wave, and he's just like, there you go, I did it. Like, but he does it really well. Because he's an actor, and actors, especially back when you wouldn't get fired for being drunk during a show, would get drunk all the time, and they knew how to just act through it, 24/7. So that did not surprise me at all. Yeah, so The Imitation is a greater success, because honestly, he kind of does do it a little bit better, where he literally makes it look like he was teleported to a portal.
Yeah, which is kind of the whole point of the thing, is that Borden is a better magician, but Angier is a better showman.
Yes, exactly.
He is the greatest showman.
No, in the very opening
the
cut...
The prophecy was fulfilled.
Yes, the very opening scene where he's just kind of like, where it's the night that, you know, quote-unquote, he dies, and he spreads his arms out, like in the front of the stage, and the curtain lifts. Me and Sam both just went, is this just The Greatest Showman, but like 15 years before The Greatest Showman came out? Yeah, he did do a better job with it, I thought, doing the doors like this, because it just looked so much cooler. Because, yeah, his whole thing was that Borden just didn't have any style. He was always kind of creepy in his delivery of things on stage. But he was able to create these way better tricks that were really impressive. And Angier couldn't, so he was just like, I have all the style, so I can just use that to my advantage. Which
well,
it worked.
He actually, as we later found out, they were doing the same trick.
They were doing literally the same trick.
They were doing the same
trick. Yes. They just didn't understand because, you know, he was doing what he had said originally, which is living the trick. Like, his whole life is a magic trick. But yeah, so The Imitation is a greater success, but Angier is dissatisfied as he ends the trick hidden under the stage while Root basks in the applause. So Angier has his assistant Olivia spy on Borden, which my whole issue with the magician's assistants is that somehow they just always decide to bang the magician, like, no matter who they're working with. Because Julia was married to homeboy, to Angier.
Yeah, I think every assistant in the movie is banging the magician.
Yeah, and I'm like, is this just like a... I don't know if this was like just the stereotype that was happening at the time, or like what the deal was. When Olivia shows up and she's like, you know, in these little costumes and like has this like, you know, gorgeous long hair, I'm like, oh, 100% that's what's gonna happen.
I mean, it's Scarlett Johansson. Like...
But I was also just kind of like, I don't know, Olivia was such a weird character to me. She was really, really, she was a weird character. She's clearly into Angier, but then when she is sent to Borden, she decides she's not into Angier anymore and falls in love with Borden, and actively will be in the same room as Borden's wife while being his mistress. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know what's going on with you. Because especially when she's like, hey, when you're with me, you're with me. Leave your family at home. And I'm like, okay. That's a weird way to go about that, ma'am. Yeah, she was a weird character to me. But yeah, so he sends Olivia to spy on Borden to learn how he performs the transported man. However, Olivia falls in love with Borden and becomes his assistant. With her help, Borden sabotages Angier's act, crippling him in the process. Yeah, so he gets to Root, where he's basically telling Root he has all the power in the situation, and gets him a little power mad, so then Root doesn't come out at the proper time, and comes out, like, way later, and makes it all about him and, like, the comedy of it, and ruins the trick, essentially. And then Borden just says, Root, don't even bother, and Borden comes out instead, and I think ties up Root and has him coming down, because yep. I'm pretty sure that was Root.
Yeah, that was Root.
Who came down from the ceiling tied up with an advertisement for Borden's show around his neck.
I mean, honestly, it was, if he hadn't taken the landing pad away, thus crippling Angier, mm-hmm. I would have been all for it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If he hadn't done that one thing, yeah. I'd be like, honestly, that's the most brilliant, like, advertisement. Like,
absolutely.
That would be, like, that's something I would do if I could.
Yeah,
if
no.
If it weren't for him crippling
Angier. Plus, that's your first time kind of getting, like, the influence Olivia's had, like, on his shows.
Yeah, exactly. Because she knows all of the, you know, where everything is for Angier's tricks. So she's like, yeah, I can tell you exactly how to do what you want to do. That was a really cool, cool moment. I mean, I felt bad for Angier, but I was also like, that's kind of a sick move. Like, that's pretty sick. Again, I agree with you, Sam. If he hadn't, like, you know, if he hadn't crippled him, then I would have been like, dude, that was kind of cool. Like, you got to give him props for that. But no, he had to go so far as to permanently cripple Angier, at which point I was like, all right, that's overkill. You didn't have to do all that. Yeah, so confronted by Angier, Olivia gives him a copy of Borden's encoded diary. Angier acquires the keyword to decode it, Tesla, by threatening to kill Fallon. The diary takes Angier to America to meet scientist Nikola Tesla, who Angier believes built a machine for Borden. Angier realizes the diary is fraudulent, created as a distraction. That was pretty cool. Again, Borden is the better magician.
Right.
Yeah.
Where he has Olivia, you know, pretend to give up his diary and, like, all this stuff. And then at the end, he's like, at the end of the diary, he's like, yeah, I told Olivia to give you this. No, none of my secrets are in here. Good luck. Like, no, I loved it. So Tesla builds the machine for him, but instead of teleporting objects, Tesla's machine duplicates anything placed inside it a short distance away. Tesla is driven from Colorado Springs by agents of his rival, Thomas Alva Edison, but has the machine delivered to Angier. He advises Angier to destroy it, saying it will bring him only misery. Yeah, the whole thing with the, like, cloning device was really cool. And I like that they hinted at it at the very beginning, because, like, the very first, like, shot of the movie is just a ton of hats on some grass. Right. And I remember later I saw his top hat, you know, on Angier's head, and I was like, huh. And Sam was like, what? And I was like, well, in the very first shot, there were like 20 top hats on the ground. That's got to be significant for some reason. And so I was like, I don't know, maybe they'll talk about it. So when they did, I was like, ooh, okay, sneaky.
Sneaky.
I genuinely thought I was tripping balls for like a whole 2 minutes. Because for once, there was just no opening track.
Oh, yeah, I know. Same. That was our thing.
I was like,
we were trying to figure out if our volume was messed up or what was going on. Yeah.
I was like, oh, my volume working? And then the ever lovely voice of Michael Caine came in. I was like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, the whole intro, all the logos, and even the first like few seconds of the movie are dead silence. And so we all thought that our TVs weren't working. We were like, what's going on here?
What's happening?
Yeah, no, but that is just how the movie is. So if you watch it and you think your TV's broken, it's probably not. Just wait for Michael Caine to start talking and then you'll know for sure. Borden's wife, Sarah, is driven to suicide by his contradictory personality. And there is a fun fact about that specific scene, like their final argument that I'll tell y'all later. It was pretty cool. Which his contradictory personality makes sense, considering everything.
Yeah, but if I'm Frederick Albert, whichever one is in love with
Alfred.
Alfred is a conglomeration.
Yeah, Alfred is both of their names put together. Because there's Frederick and there's Albert. So they made Alfred.
I think Albert's the one that's in love with Sarah.
Yeah, Albert's
one of them's in love with Sarah.
If I'm Albert, I don't let... I'm like, dude, Frederick, like, you don't get to be the husband. Like, the fact that Frederick was having that argument with Sarah, like, if I'm Albert, I don't let that happen.
But the whole thing is that they live the trick. They're not going to, like,
right, but,
de off them.
But at that point, you make sure that whenever you go to your house, that Frederick is Fallon and Albert is Alfred.
I agree, but the whole thing is that while both of those men loved both of those women, they care so much more about this giant illusion that they're creating than about anything else. As we learn, when he lets, I don't know which one, go to the gallows, he lets
Frederick,
it happen.
Frederick went to the gallows.
Yeah, the brother sits there and watches and just goes, okay,
well,
goodbye.
I mean, what was he supposed to do?
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, you know, I mean, I agree, we talked about this. There's no way that he's going to get out of it. But the whole thing is, like, you know, he doesn't even try to argue. He's like, no. And he knows that that the entire thing is, you know, about this giant illusion they've created. So, like, I mean, you know, that clearly matters more to both of them.
I mean, you get the first sense of Borden's ideals with the fishbowl. Because he's like, my God, this guy lives his facade.
Yeah.
Because, like, and because we see how it operates with Engineer afterwards.
Right.
Because
right.
Engineer doesn't figure it out, but Borden does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's sitting there like, so he realizes that in order to make his act a success, is that he needs to live it.
Mm-hmm.
And he truly means, because here's the thing, that's the whole thing I think with Borden's character and why he doesn't swap with, why he swaps so much with Albert and Frederick, is that he's like, he's willing to risk it all for the sake of the show.
Exactly.
Yeah. I felt like it was weird.
It could have been done.
I felt that it was weird that Frederick would even have that argument with her when he wasn't the one that was in love with her. So, like, why would he care?
I don't think the wife knew.
I know the wife did. Well, the wife started to figure out.
Well, because that's what that whole last scene was, is she's like, I know what you are.
Yeah.
And she starts to figure it out.
She
and
started
like,
to figure it out.
Yeah.
But either way, I feel like, it's just weird that Frederick would start yelling at somebody who he knew that he didn't love, but he knew that his brother loved. It was just weird to me. That was the one time that I thought the premise got a little out of the way, because if Frederick didn't love Sarah, if Frederick loved Olivia, then why would he make such a big deal of all this to Sarah? Why not just
because she's figuring it out, and no one's supposed to figure it out. Because she starts saying, I know what you are, I know what you are, and he starts panicking.
And,
because
and
other guy
says,
other guy was
fair.
Right outside the room. If he had had a problem with what was happening, he would have popped in. If he had that big of a problem, or they would have had some secret knock, he was outside the door with their daughter.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird. Again, I thought it was weird that in that situation, why is Albert not the one who's playing Borden at that point?
Clearly, they didn't have a problem with it, because, like, Albert
I know,
was
in and that's what I'm saying, is that's what's weird to me, is that they didn't have a problem with that.
I think I know what it was, and he mentioned it earlier on in the scene. He just got out of the theater, and they just got back home. So there was not time for them to sit there and, like, there wasn't time for Albert to not become, what's his name?
Frederick. Albert and Frederick.
Become Frederick.
Oh, Fallon. Yeah.
He didn't have time to get into the facade of Fallon. So, the argument, which the wife wanted to have right then,
was
had to have with Frederick.
Yeah.
And there was...
And that's what Albert understood. He was like, I can't do anything about this, so I'm just going to take my daughter away.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have too much trouble with that whole, like, you know, the premise of that scene. I felt like it made sense for the situation. And the brothers have made this, you know, choice to you know, basically run their lives around this illusion. So you can't be too surprised when things like this start to slip.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that wasn't too, like, upsetting to me. But yeah, as a result of that conversation, she is, you know, driven to kill herself by this contradictory personality, which that, the whole thing was finally explained to me about why Frederick apologized as he was being pulled away to Fallon, why he was like, I'm sorry about Sarah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand at the moment, and I was like, was she like his sister or something? Because honestly, I never gathered
that.
That
was the first glimpse
that
you kind of get of
of the fact that there's two.
There's it's been a ruse the whole time. Like that's like the first time you get the hint of it.
Yeah, because I was so confused. I was like, did I miss something? Like, was Sarah her like his sister? Like, what's going on? And so when that happened, I was like, oh, that sucks for him. Like, damn. But yeah, so Borden reveals to Olivia that he never loved Sarah and that he loves her more. Because, of course, at that moment, he is Frederick. So, tired of Borden and Angier's feud, Olivia leaves, which, for a second, I thought she was about to try to almost be a double-double agent. She was like, he's got a new trick, and it's amazing, and, like, and she was, like, leaving, and I was like, hold on a second. Like, she can't be, like, a double-double-double agent here. But the way she said it made it seem like she was, going back to Angier or something.
She was just dumb with the situation.
I realized it after a few seconds. I was like, okay, no, she's not doing that. But for a second, just the way she delivered the line made me think that. But yeah, so in London, Angier debuts the real transported man using Tesla's machine, appearing to have teleported across the theater. Borden sneaks backstage and witnesses Angier fall through a trap door and drown in a tank. He is discovered by Cutter and turned over to the police. Unable to prove his innocence, Borden is found guilty of murder and sentenced to death. Which, first off, genius to have blind stagehands. That is a genius move on Angier's part. Because Angier isn't stupid. That's what we were saying, is that Borden's main flaw through the whole movie is him thinking that Angier is stupid. Because he's not. He's not as quick as Borden is. Like, Borden
is clever.
But he's very smart. Yeah, he'll figure it out eventually and he'll be like, cool, I know what to do. Like, right. Like he's not an idiot. Yeah, so the whole time he's just assuming that Angier is never going to figure it out.
I just realized this, but that whole, like, conversation that him and Fallon have, because they mention it, that they went to go see the show 100 times, and they just couldn't figure it out. Like, they knew how Fallon and Borden did it.
Oh, you're talking about, Fallon and,
Fallon and Borden's conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't know why this moment didn't hit in the movie, and why I didn't pick up on it. I know I'm slow to the punches, but I know why I missed it, but looking back on it, it's fun to sit there and realize it. I'm gonna call it out, Albert. Albert was like, just drop it. You know what? We're done.
Yeah.
He gets the last laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, if you remember, as Frederick is getting dragged away, he's like, I'm sorry I couldn't leave it alone.
Yeah.
So Alfred clearly wanted Albert clearly wanted to be done with it, and Frederick wasn't willing to let it go.
Yeah.
Because Albert saw Engineer as a friend who needed coaxing into being willing to do more and take more risks.
Yeah, Frederick, I think Albert probably did somewhat see Engineer as a friend. Yeah.
I think he genuinely cared about Engineer. So until the end, I sit there and think that malicious intent.
Yeah. And at that point, I mean, it was, you killed my brother, you tried to take my daughter away from me.
There was a whole bunch of things that just kind of stacked against him.
Yeah.
But Frederick just saw Engineer as a creative rival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was like, I have to figure out how this works. And that's whenever he overstepped his boundaries.
And I do think part of it had to do with Sarah, is that when everything happened with Sarah, I think for Albert, it was almost like a wake-up call that, okay, someone that I love more than anything has actually been hurt because of what we're doing. And I think he started looking at his daughter as, what if this happens to her or something similar? And so I think that was part of the reason why he was like, we're done. We're going to leave this alone. Like, he obsessed over it for a little while. And then he was like, you know what? It's just not worth it. I've seen what this does and I've seen what we're doing. And I don't want another person that I love to start, you know, losing their mind. And so I think that was part of it, was that Albert, he wasn't ready to leave the illusion behind, but he was like, we need to leave this obsession behind so that we can focus better on this part of the illusion. Yeah. And actually, like, you know, pay attention to when I'm with my daughter and, you know, how everything is happening. Yeah, that's part of what I think it was. So Angier, whose true idea, I knew from the very beginning, I was like, Angier ain't dead. And he's Lord Caldlow.
You knew that from the very beginning.
Minute so one, I knew it.
It hit at the end, and I realized that they totally gave it away when he was talking to his wife, and she referenced that he had a fake name, and he was all like, well, you know, I didn't want to embarrass my family, blah, 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 blah. It's like, of course he was the rich lord dude, because that's why he didn't want to embarrass his family, is because it was the Caldwell family, and so he was actually really rich. He was just, this is what he wanted to do, so he was pretending to slum it as a low-level
magician.
That's interesting.
See, I didn't put that together.
Yep.
No, I put that together literally from the moment that that Owens walked up to Frederick and said, yes, a Lord Caldwell wants to do this. I was like, that's him.
See,
that's
as soon as Root came on stage, I thought, oh, so that's who actually died. But no, it was actually Angier. It was just...
I didn't think it was Root.
Discarded body of Angier.
I didn't think it was Root until you said so, and then I was like, well, maybe it was Root, but, like, there are differences in their faces. Like,
I think what was ultimately, like, the, from what clicked for me is the double reversal of the journal.
Yeah.
Like, once you get towards the end of the journal, I'm like, Angier's just screwing with him now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was because he had clones.
Of course.
He could clone himself and then kill the discarded body.
Yeah.
Because I read up on that a little bit, and they better explain it in the novel how the whole cloning thing works, which is what it does is it actually passes the consciousness of Angier into the new body. So the old body is like, it described it as like a shell of Angier.
Well, yeah, that's what, that was one of my fun facts I was going to do, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's why he was kind of okay killing it, because it wasn't him.
No,
like Angier moved on into the new clone.
Yeah, the way that they described it in here,
at least in the book.
So the thing that I found on IMDb, just to like be clear about it. So in the novel, the machine works a bit differently than in the film. It doesn't copy a person exactly as they are, memories and personality intact 50 to 100 feet away from the device's location. Instead, it does in fact transport the essence of the person into a newly created body, leaving behind a seemingly dead husk. These dead husks are what Angier refers to as his prestige materials in the novel.
Yeah, so it is different.
It's
different
in the movie. In the movie, it is literally a copy of him.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Whereas in the novel, it's not. Yeah, so his true identity is revealed to be the wealthy Lord Caldwell, and he visits Borden in prison, accompanied by Borden's daughter, Jess. In exchange for his tricks, Borden asks Angier to let his daughter go, but Angier leaves with Jess. When Cutter realizes that Angier is still alive, he is disgusted that Angier allowed Borden to be sentenced, but agrees to help dispose of Tesla's machine, and Borden is hanged for Angier's murder. So that was the moment when Cutter was like, I'm over this guy. Like, I'm done with everything with you. And when Albert, like, approaches Cutter, because clearly that's what happened, is that Albert, like, came to Cutter and was like, hey, you know, my brother's dead now because of all this. Let me get in the room with him.
Yeah.
And Cutter went, sure. Like, I hate everything that just happened, so go right ahead. I have no loyalty to this
and
guy
Cutter
anymore.
Take care of the kid. Honestly,
yeah.
Cutter's the only, like, good person in the whole
Cutter
movie.
Is a genuinely good person.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Like, Cutter is...
Aside from killing birds, he is a genuinely good person.
Wait, he never actually did that in the movie.
I thought he did. Mm-mm. Was that not him?
No,
that was somebody else. That was the other magician that they...
That was the other one.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, so Cutter was really good the entire time.
He created the way to save the birds.
Yes, because there was the other magician that had it just like they died
instantly.
Because that was the one
and
that Borden...
Brought out a new pigeon.
Yeah.
That was the one that Borden had gone to see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, Cutter's definitely the little golden egg between the two.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah, he's... Or between the three of them, sorry.
But yeah, but I think he just finally decided that between the two men, the one who has been wronged more is Borden. And so I think that's why he was like, okay, yeah, you know, I'll let you in the room with him. You can do whatever you want. Like, no worries.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not justifying Angier here. But much in the same way that Borden... Not to the same degree, but in the same way that Borden is kind of responsible for the death of...
Julia.
Yeah,
Sarah.
Julia. Colroy did say that, or Angier, did sit there and tell Cutter, like, I don't want you involved in this.
Yeah. Like, he was like, I never wanted you involved. Because the thing is, Angier knows that what he's doing is, like, absolutely screwed up. Like, he has no illusions about that. He's like, I know that I'm being a terrible person right now, but I can't help it. Like,
because it's the greatest trick ever.
Exactly, because he's like, I have to do this. Like, I don't have the option.
Another thing, he's trying to get rid of it, and he never wanted him to realize that Colroy is actually...
I gotta tell you, John, you've messed up these names, like, every time you've said it. It's Caldlow, and then it's Angier, not Engineer. I had to tell you, because you just kept saying them wrong. I was like, it's Caldlow and Angier.
Angier. Yes. Angier and Caldlow.
And Caldlow, yes.
Caldlow. Caldlow, yeah. It was such an interesting, like, farce to have involved, because both of them had farces at the end of the day. It's just a matter of, you know, who came out on top.
A farce with no comedy, basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's just, what would you call it? Like a reverse?
A dramatic farce.
A dramatic farce?
Yes.
To quote our theater professors, unpack that.
let's unpack this.
Let's unpack this. Oh, no. But, yeah, it was, because he knew Cutter was going to be upset. And plus, at that point, the moment that Cutter found out, Cutter realized how far both the men had gone. Mm-hmm. And I think Cutter kind of viewed the two as his sons.
Yeah, like estranged sons, you know? Yeah.
Because, I mean, he doesn't have anything else. And, I mean, as far as we know, they've all been, like, buddy-buddy from the get-go of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to sit there and, you know, have, like, realize your sons are literally killing each other over the figuring out of one trick, which ultimately both of them use the same tactics.
Yep. Yeah, they use the exact same tactics.
Just at the end of the day, Cutter was right about it, because Cutter told Angier that that's what Borden was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's using a double, and he was right.
And he kept being like, you just want it to be more. You want it to be real. Like, you want it to be something that is impossible. And that's not what it is. He was like, it's a double, I promise. And even Olivia, she's like, yeah, it's a double. Like, I see the makeup and everything for the double backstage. Like, it's a double.
Yo, first off, I would give props to Freddie to sit there and chisel your own finger off.
Oh, dude.
For the sake of a show, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all willing. Like, I'll do whatever I can for the show. But when that physical harm gets involved, I'm like,
especially permanent loss of appendages. Right. Like,
that's where I'm like, if I have to, like, because, you know, they, like, World Wrestling Federation and wrestling in general, they are not foreign to sit there and use razor blades mm-hmm. to create actual blood on stage.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I get that. Do I like it? No. But I understand the effect and the appeal. But this is, like, I love my family, but I think I'd be a little more hesitant from what I saw from Frederick, of just like, all right, chisel it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started to remind me of magic shows I've gone to that have freaked me out. I went to one when I was like 13. They pulled a girl from the audience and they had her hold her arm out. And they took, like, a knife and had, like, you know, a different person come up and, like, mm-hmm. look at it and, like, flip it around and be like, it's a knife. And then they just, like, slice down her arm and blood goes pouring out. And they look at the girl and they're like, feel anything? And she's like, no, I don't. But I see things that I feel like I shouldn't be seeing. And then, like, 2 seconds later, they're doing the same thing with a different, like, person from the audience where they're chopping their, like, fingers off with a knife. And they're like, you feel anything? And they're like, no. And then, like, 2 seconds later, they just wave their hand and their fingers are back and they can wiggle them and everything. And I just remember I was always blown away by those.
I actually do know.
Congratulations, you saw some plants.
Yeah, exactly. Of course.
But
I didn't know what those were back when I was like 13. I thought there were no plants. I didn't know those existed.
I don't remember how, but I actually have seen how that finger chopping trick actually works. I just don't remember how it was operated, but I have seen footage of that actually being done before. This is straight up just like, I see why it was labeled a thriller.
Yeah, it was such a good movie, honestly.
It was very good.
It was. And, you know, and first off, props to the cast, again.
It was a star-studded cast.
It was. First off, gorgeous cast. Second off, talented cast.
Yeah.
Like,
beautiful to look at and beautiful actors. Like,
beautiful actors. Did, like, great. They, like, I love, and I keep forgetting it because I just don't, I need to watch more of his films. But the dedication of Christian Bale, because every time I've watched Christian Bale do a role, it's not Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Like, it is, but you get a different aspect of him each time.
Yeah. Apparently he's a psycho on set, though.
I mean, you can't be too surprised. Most of the best actors are psychos.
Yeah. Like, most people really don't like working with him.
Well, that's true of a lot of, like, really talented actors. I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, a lot of people say the same thing about him. Like, that he is, like, just awful to work with and injures fellow actors.
But you know what? You know who everybody loves on set? Dwayne Johnson, baby.
Because he's such a genuinely nice guy. He is so nice.
He's the best.
He's such a nice guy.
He's not an actor, but
no,
he's
the best
actor.
Up and he plays himself. That's what he does.
I was gonna say, like, it, I mean, with the level of confidence that Dwayne the Rock Johnson has, I mean, plus the guy clearly, I mean, plus the guy's obviously doing it because he loves what he does.
Yeah. Oh, he loves it.
Well, because and here's the thing, that man is making bank.
Just for being a big guy that's lovable.
So my theory that I have is that he is the only true movie star left.
What do you mean by true? I know you've explained this to me before, but I forget.
So Dwayne Johnson, why I think he is the only true movie star that we have left right now is because I think he is the only person that truly sells box office tickets.
That's fair. If he's on a movie poster, it will sell. Yeah.
Like RDJ has done movies recently, even since the end, like Endgame and all that, that have bombed.
Yeah.
He did Dr. Dolittle, which completely bombed.
That was so
RDJ.
Trash,
as much as a star as RDJ is, people don't go see movies just because he's in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot think of another actor right now that every movie he does makes bank just because he's in it. And Dwayne Johnson, I mean, Rampage, every movie he does, even if the critics hate it, makes bank because it's a Dwayne Johnson movie.
Yeah.
So that's why I think he's the only true movie star left.
I think that's probably fair, yeah.
I mean, and again, the reason why I say that, you know, like, he's like, it's clearly a man who enjoys what he does is because that man has started, like, so many different aspects to a company.
Yeah. Well, like, and what I love and I think why people love him is because he is, like, brutally honest. Like, he's constantly posting, like, 15-minute conversations on his Instagram where he just sits down and talks to people about what's going on in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is... Like, he kind of keeps a lot of his more personal details out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, like, he is brutally honest about what he's feeling about projects he's working on.
Yeah.
Like, I remember after... what movie was it? It wasn't Rampage. It was Skyscraper, I think.
Oh, that one.
After he talked about it after it came out, and he was all like, yeah, there were things that we didn't do right, you know... but again, that movie still made bank.
Because it's him.
But he was honest in admitting where he thinks they messed up.
Because
he produces all his own movies, so he can do that.
Yeah.
He doesn't get in trouble because he produces them all.
Yeah. No, he is a genuinely, like, good guy.
He is so brutally honest. I think that's why people love him. Is because he's so open about everything.
You know, that man could honestly just thrive off. First off, he came out with and this is what he's coming, like, really popular for all of a sudden. He came out with his own, I think, mix of tequila.
Yeah, he came out with his own tequila brand.
Yeah, he has his own tequila brand. There's a rock tequila brand. That man could thrive off of that.
You know who else just came out with a tequila brand?
Who?
Kendall Jenner.
That doesn't surprise me. I would have expected vodka, not tequila.
Yeah, that's fair. That man could just thrive off of his gym attire.
Anyway.
But yes.
Yeah, welcome to our Dwayne the Rock Johnson fan club podcast, everybody.
Look, everybody's in the Dwayne Johnson fan club. Nobody's not.
Apparently he wanted, at least during Rampage, he was wanting everyone to call him DJ.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I don't think it caught on, but he wanted everyone to call him DJ.
But yeah, no, I was excited to see, you know, because poor Hugh Jackman. I think Hugh Jackman's pretty close up there.
Hugh Jackman is one of those that people do really,
he's not
really
maybe,
look
like, to
to
the degree of...
I don't think anybody will go see a movie just because it has Hugh Jackman in it.
My mother will.
Actually, like, that's very true. The kind of middle-aged women market is high tide, like, number one. Anyone will go see a Hugh Jackman movie if they're, like, our parents' age.
But, granted, my mother just... likes Hugh Jackman for his body, but, you know.
He is a gorgeous man. I can't blame her for that.
In the words of my mother, he's so charismatic.
Why does that track so well?
Dude, you know his mom can't say anything mildly sexual about Hugh Jackman. And it's so funny,
because my mom's
That was about Harrison Ford, but I love teasing her about that, because he came, it was when the new Star Wars trailer came out, and Harrison Ford came on screen, and mom, like, sighed. We were all in the room together. Mom goes, Harrison Ford is still so charismatic, and we all just, like, burst out laughing, and to this day, we still tease her about that whenever,
See, my mom doesn't hide it. She'll just straight up be like, all right, I gotta go see this movie because Matthew McConaughey gets naked in it. Be right back. And just, like, go watch the new Magic Mike, like.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't want to blame, but I think this is just the effect that superhero movies have had in the last, like, century or two.
Decade.
I was about to say, I don't think superhero movies were happening a full century ago.
I don't know numbers, guys.
moving pictures have been barely happening for a century, John.
Decades. All right, decades.
Was it 30 minutes away, John?
Shut up, Samuel.
You're going to make him kill us tonight, Sam.
But in the past, like, few decades, Hugh Jackman for so long has been known to iconically reprise his role as Wolverine.
He holds the Guinness World Record for the longest tenure as a superhero in film.
And it's so sad, and I can understand, you know, the frustration of Hugh Jackman and why he had to just give up the character is because...
I don't think he's done with it.
Oh, probably. Well, here's the thing.
I think there's no way that at some point they don't have a true Deadpool Wolverine movie. As good for Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds are, like, really good friends. I don't think Ryan Reynolds is just gonna let Hugh Jackman walk away from Wolverine when they haven't done something together.
Right.
That's probably fair, yeah.
But again, you can understand first because he's done a lot of fantastic roles outside of.
Yeah. Well, also, he started on the stage.
He still does a lot of stuff on stage. I mean, he's a Tony Award winning actor.
Yeah, like, he's on Broadway a lot, and he's probably the biggest Broadway star. Aside from like big names like Lin-Manuel Miranda or Sutton Foster.
I think he's bigger than them just because he's also a movie star.
Yeah.
Like, he is the most well known true Broadway star. There are movie stars who have done a couple of things on Broadway.
He's a true Daniel Radcliffe. Right. I think the best way to describe it is he's the biggest Broadway star in Hollywood.
Yes. That's fair. Yes, I would agree.
I think that's the best way to
probably
describe
him and James Gordon.
But I think, honestly, this movie James Corden.
Baker from Into the Woods.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Or the character in Cats.
Don't you say that to me. Don't you say that to me.
I couldn't resist it. He's fantastic. And honestly, watching him in this kind of made up for my distaste of Greatest Showman.
Which, again, he was good in Greatest Showman.
It was just the problem with the writing.
The story.
They warped and, quote-unquote, whitewashed. Not whitewashed in the sense of, like, you know, turning a guy white, but whitewashed in the sense of we're going to wash him clean of all his sins that he had.
P.T.
Like,
Barnum was purged. Yeah, terrible.
P.T. Barnum was absolutely horrible, and they made him out to be this, like, savior of all these people. And I'm like, no, he was awful.
He was, like, almost a slave master.
Yes, he basically was.
A terrible human being.
Like, I get the message they wanted to send with the film, and cool, great.
So don't base it on a real historical figure. Make up a historical figure. Like, or if you're going to base it on P.T. Barnum, make it real about P.T. Barnum.
And show how terrible of a person he was.
And then create a savior figure.
Or make one of the like, quote-unquote circus freaks the savior figure that, like, pulls everybody out.
Make Zendaya,
I was going to say the bearded lady should have been the savior figure.
I was just going to say, make one of them the main character.
Yeah, like, if the bearded lady had been the main character and it was all about her, like, helping her fellow, like, you know, circus freaks
Zac Efron's character could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zac Efron could have been the savior figure.
And you have it as he comes in and he sees all this and he's, like...
mistreatment and stuff.
Well, and like he's like kind of tricked by it all. He thinks it's all so cool, and then slowly over the course of the movie, he became disillusioned with it. He realized how terrible P.T. Barnum was, and he helped everybody get out. That would have been good.
That would have been a good movie where he starts to see it, and especially they could have kept the whole love arc with him and Zendaya.
Yeah,
and it could have been like
they could have kept almost the same movie, just changed a couple of
just things. Just change some stuff, make it a little darker and real, and then it would have been good. But I digress. So let me finish this plot summary. So this is just the twist at the end. This is the last scene. So Angier goes back to the theater. A stranger enters and shoots Angier, not pulling any punches, reveals himself as Borden. Angier discovers Borden was an identity shared by a pair of identical twins. The brothers performed the original transported man together when one was Borden, the other was disguised as Fallon. The surviving twin loved Sarah, while his brother had loved Olivia. While Angier uses Tesla's machine, every performance creates a new Angier, while the original drowns in a tank beneath the stage. Angier dies and drops his lantern, setting the theater alight. Borden leaves and picks up Jess at Cutter's workshop. In the burning theater, rows of tanks hold dead Angiers. So, yeah, it was the original that died every time.
Yep.
Like, the one that had succeeded the previous night is the one that died in the tank. So the clone was always the one that was staying alive. Yeah, so that's super creepy.
Angier died, John.
It's clones.
Yeah, Angier died every single night. And then he would just sort of like, sort of like he would wake up in another body almost.
Yeah.
According to the novel, that's exactly what happened, is that he woke up
in another body. I think that was their way of doing it.
Yeah, but their way was, you're literally having to kill yourself every single night. Like, it's not a dead husk anymore, it's still you.
Crap, I mean, shoot, that's the whole point of the... is that he's literally killing himself to make this show work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that at the end, I really loved Hugh Jackman's last line before he dies, where he's talking to Borden about how Borden never understood why they really did it. It wasn't for all of the competition, it was to see the look on their faces, because if you can trick them even for a second, then you change the world they live in. And well, yeah, like you and give them this like this a feeling of maybe magic might be real, you know, because they don't know how you did it. I mean, that's part of his whole monologue there is also why I love like theater and stuff, is because it takes people away from like the reality of your world for a little while.
Yeah.
So I just love that monologue.
I think that's what makes it so interesting, because I don't know if you remember it, but Borden gives a similar monologue towards the beginning of...
Yep.
As he's watching the guy walk into the cart, he's like, man, I do this to get away from all this. And he like taps on the thing, just if I could just get away for a second.
Yeah.
And but for Borden, it's all about himself getting away from himself.
Exactly. Borden, it's purely for a selfish reason. And that's why Angier's
a better showman.
Because Angier is all about the audience getting away
from everything. And that's why it killed Angier to be under the stage, but Borden was fine with it.
Yeah, Borden was like, I can be under the stage because I'm still escaping. Like, no big deal. Yeah, I love it. I thought it was really great. But that was The Prestige. So, guessing game, boys. What do y'all think this is rated on IMDb?
7.9.
All right.
8.3.
Johnny Boy is closer. Hey. It's an 8.5.
Coming back, John.
Yeah, back. No, you're coming back. You're coming back. What about critical score on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100?
78.
Okay.
84.
That time Sam was closer. 76. Very close. And audience score out of 100?
87.
85.
Sam again, it's 92.
Hey.
You got too confident, John. You started thinking you had it.
I started backtracking because I was like, oh, I flipped it around. I should have known better.
So if you guys could rename this one, what's a different title that you would give The Prestige?
They Do It With Mirrors.
That's actually a pretty cool title. I would watch that movie.
I think that's the name of an Agatha Christie book, but that's okay.
Yeah, I'll say that sounds...
There's something on the shelf familiar that definitely says something, something, something mirrors.
Well, that's the mirror cracked, but yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, I would probably... For a second, I was like, oh, that's what I would call it. And I was like, wait, there's already a movie called this. So I think I would just call it... I don't know. I think I would call it Uncaged.
Because
I think The Birdcage has so much more to do with the story than anyone gives it credit for. that, like, you know, the birds are always a casualty and everything, especially watching, like, the birds die at the beginning and the other bird live is, like, such a foreshadowing of Angier's trick at the end. So I think I would call it that. That would be my title.
I hate to do this. That's not my most original work. The Transporting Man.
That's Transported fair. Man? Yeah.
The Transporting Man.
Okay.
Yeah, the Transporting Man, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one had a budget of $40 million, and it made $109 million worldwide, so it did pretty well. And, yeah, so I went on Amazon, and the general consensus is pretty good. It's 81% rated 5 stars. And do y'all want positive or negative first?
Positive first, then negative.
All right. So this one I thought you guys would appreciate. So this user is a top 1,000 reviewer, and the name is Obi-Wan. I thought y'all would appreciate that. This is a 5-star review that's just titled, "You Need to Watch This Movie." There are 3 parts to this movie that you will think you understand as it progresses: the beginning, the middle, and the end. Even as you think you're understanding each part, you'll suddenly start questioning your understanding of all 3 parts, and you'll be entertained by the confusion. I know this makes no sense. Watch the movie, and it will. I'm not going to go into details, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will tell you that the entire movie is wonderfully entertaining, and it will keep you thinking the entire time, trying to figure out what's going on. It's very confusing, but not in a poorly told story way. It's confusing on purpose, just like a magic show. Is. The entire film is about two magicians and their magic shows, and is one misdirection after another, just like an actual magic show is. The whole thing is so well done. It's extremely well acted. It's a great story. The set design and costuming is incredibly well done. All of this makes it a very immersive experience. I don't know how this movie slipped largely under the radar, because it's really good. Plus, how often do you get to see Alfred help Wolverine fight against Batman?
Yep.
Fair.
And this is
with Black Widow playing a double agent.
Yes, with Black Widow.
I mean, like, come on.
So this one, it wasn't a 1-star, but it was the top critical one, and I figured we could just use this one. So it's a 3-star review from a user that the name is just MNW, and the title says, "The look of the film saves it somewhat. The plot is a confusing mess. Full stop. Anyone who claims to have understood the film's plot after watching it once is lying. It's impossible to follow. You will run, not walk, to Wikipedia to try to figure out what the hell did I just see. How do you feel about watching a film for 2 hours only to learn during the last 5 minutes that Deus Ex Machina, one of the grungy theatricals, is a member of the House of Lords? However, that said, I have never seen a film that captures the look of late Victorian London this well. It's worth seeing just for the atmospherics and for the acting, which is impressive. 3 stars. So I don't agree with all that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I felt like we understood it pretty well.
Yeah.
And like, the whole Lord Caldlow thing was set up really early.
Yeah, like that wasn't right. Just like a random thing thrown right. In at the
it's
end.
It's just that if you're just not like, and yeah, sure, like it's confusing, like.
It is a confusing time, movie, but everything is tied up at the end so that you understand.
Yeah, there's not a lot of loose ends.
Like, I'm telling you as me, as someone who is always trying to fully understand a movie as I watch it, and, like, it hurts my brain if I can't understand it, that I came out of this understanding what I had just seen. Right. Which, if I can say that, it wasn't that confusing. Yeah, so I don't really agree with all that. So, these are the fun facts I found on IMDb. So, Chung Ling Su was a stage character created by William Ellsworth Robinson, a white man who disguised himself as a Chinese man to cash in on audiences' enthusiasm for the exotic. Robinson lived as Chung, never breaking character while in public, but he died in March of 1918 when a bullet catch trick went wrong. "My God, I've been shot," were both his last words and the first English he had spoken on stage in 19 years. So that was like a real dude that they showed on stage. The editing includes 146 time jump cuts, almost the same number as how many moving staircases are in Hogwarts. Extra fun fact. Time jump cuts in which the next shot either flashes back or skips ahead to another time period of the storyline. This averages to almost 1 timeline jump per minute of the movie. So that was interesting. Alfred Borden's infant was played by one of writer, producer, and director Christopher Nolan's children. And Ricky Jay, who played a magician in this movie, coached Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale on their sleight of hand techniques. The main character's initial spell, Abra, Alfred Borden, Robert Angier, as in abracadabra, a common word used by magicians. When Allie, aka Andy Serkis, is introduced, he makes a reference to a magic trick in which one person guesses the item in a person's pocket. The same trick fooled Serkis's character Gollum in The Hobbit. So David Bowie initially declined the role of Tesla when it was offered to him. Christopher Nolan flew out to him personally to tell him that he was the only person he imagined for the role, and that his larger-than-life persona would make the idea of Tesla building a cloning device believable. Upon hearing this, David Bowie changed his mind and took the role. Sarah's line, this is what I was talking about from that scene where they're arguing, her line, "I know what you are," wasn't in the script. Rebecca Hall, the actress, said that she felt terrible right after she said it, thinking she had given away the ending. But they kept it in, so apparently it wasn't too bad. Nice. Early on in the movie, Sarah's nephew asks about the bird, "Where's his brother?" Foreshadowing the fact that Borden has a twin brother. Yeah. Root, Angier's onstage double, announces that he has played Faust and Caesar in the past. Both characters were destroyed by their own ambition, as is Angier. And in the novel, the Borden twin who sneaks under the stage is not framed by Angier and does, in fact, wreck the transported man trick. His interference creates two Angiers, one sickly at having had half his essence taken out of him, the other a wraith-like being who can only be somewhat solid through intense concentration.
That takes it to a whole different place.
Oh, yeah. It takes it to like a much more like paranormal place. Yeah, so those are all my fun facts. So, if we could recast each other in this... Who we? I mean, I already know that you're Angier, Sam. Yeah. I thought that through the entire movie. You're
John's
Angier.
Cutter.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That tracks.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Who am I? Am I the cat?
Yeah.
The cat. The kid shot.
You wish you were the cat.
You could also play a really good Sarah.
I would say Sarah would be my cast.
I would like to play Sarah. She's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
She's very complex to sit there and.
Yeah, you could play. Yeah, I'd cast you as Sarah, John as Cutter, and then me as Andrew.
Cool. I'll just be the understudy for the cat. So, favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
I don't know that I have either. Like this wasn't a movie about moments. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
It's more of a timeline.
Right. Like.
I mean.
The fun of this movie is, again, it's a thriller. It's built as a thriller. It's. A mystery, it's figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, because the fun of the movie is trying to figure out before they tell you.
Yeah.
So it's not like there are moments in the movie that are my favorite moments or my least favorite moments. Everything is like, I don't think I have a favorite or least favorite moment.
If I had to choose, I mean, my least favorite is everything where a bird died. That's my least favorite. Favorite would probably just be... when they showed magic tricks but didn't explain how they happened. Just because I'm a sucker for magic tricks. I think magic shows are so much fun. Because, and as for the same reason that I loved going to the theater as a kid, is because I don't like to try to figure it out. I want to be fooled and I want to, like, you know, believe that everything I'm seeing is real.
See, I want to try and figure it out, but I don't want somebody to tell me. I want to figure it out for myself.
Well, see, I, as a kid, like, I always hated going to the theater with other kids because the other kids would be, like, suddenly there's, like, wind gushing around the theater and, like, you know, and, like, we're feeling, a mist because we're supposed to be in a storm or something. And they'd be like, "That's just a fan and the dude is up there with the squirt gun." And I'm sitting over there like, "I just want to believe I'm actually in a storm. Can you just not be this way?" And that would be you, Sam. I know you're grinning right now because that would have been you. Where you would have been doing exactly that in that theater.
I mean, I wouldn't have been yelling it out, but I'd be looking for it.
Yeah, but every kid I felt like was trying to do that, and I so didn't want to. I wanted to just believe that I was in this, like, different world, and that's what I love about magic shows, is I never want to figure it out. I'm like, trick me. I want to be tricked, and I don't want to see how you did it. And so I love that. So all my favorites were when they would just do little, like, sleight-of-hand things and not show how they did it. I love that.
My favorite had to have been the, "I've been Julius Caesar. I've been Faust." Playing you's not that difficult.
If I had to pick a favorite moment, it would be when he messed up the magic trick in prison on purpose and then chained
the leg of the guard.
That was hilarious.
That's definitely honorable mention for me.
I could be wrong on this, but I am pretty sure they used the set. They used that set later for Sherlock Holmes. Prison set?
It was super the same familiar.
Exact set Dude, as from Sherlock like, Holmes. Like, so I am close. Pretty sure they reused that set.
That was
it was just a couple years later. I'm pretty sure they reused that set.
I mean, it's possible.
This was a... Was this Warner
this
Brothers?
This was Warner Brothers.
Yeah, then it would have been the same production company.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure they reused that set.
Well, how about out of 10 doves, what would you guys rate The Prestige?
I'm going to give this my first 10. I loved this movie. I want to own it.
Nice.
I'll give it a 9 doves.
I think I'll give it almost a 10. I'll give it like a 9.7 doves. The only reason I take it off, and I don't agree with the reviewer that like by the end of it, I was still confused and like trying to figure it out. But you know, it did make me kind of work a lot because
I like that. That's
well, cool. No. And I gradually got used to it. But specifically at the very beginning, there were moments where I was kind of like, okay, where are we in time right now? Because they didn't establish like when they were jumping to different times, there was just suddenly Hugh Jackman's alive. And I was like, oh, so this must be the past. But then they would go even further in the past. And I'm like, okay, so which one's which? And so like just at the beginning, before I got used to it, it was a little hard for me to like grasp the handlebars and just let it take me for a ride.
See, I docked mine a point, and I do agree it's a fantastic film.
Oh, it's amazing.
But I docked the points for rewatching. I feel like after you watch this movie like two or three times, it can kind of be like, all right.
See,
this
is a movie I would never rewatch on my own, but I would show this to people.
That's fair. It might be a great party film.
Yeah. It's a great like, oh, you want to see a good movie? Here, let me put this.
I would probably rewatch it just for the acting alone. Like the acting was amazing. But yeah, so I dock like, you know, 0.3 points just for that little kind of difficulty at the beginning of understanding.
The stutter.
Yeah, just the little stutter for me, the mental stutter until I got into the swing of the movie. But that's the only reason that I dock anything, because the acting is amazing. It looks beautiful. It's such a well-done story. It's well directed. Everyone like feels like they belong there, and it's just a star-studded cast. Like, it's absolutely wonderful. So yeah, if you love a good mystery, if you love a good thriller, if you like having just a little bit of magic and thrown in with some history, I think you'll really like this movie. It's really, really good. So I highly recommend it. I think it's great. And I think we all would highly recommend it. Unless y'all have any final thoughts, I think that's all we have for y'all today.
That's
it for me. Yeah. So again, go follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment, or on Twitter at artists_mad. And please continue to send in your auditions for Call of Cthulhu. It's open until March 14th.
Yep.
This coming week, we have made some casting decisions about some larger characters, which we're going to be announcing later this week. And then we're going to be moving on to our second round of characters as well, so we'll be allowing people
but
to re-audition and everything
to
with that.
Audition,
of course.
Anyway.
Please audition no matter what, because you know
there's
we're going to be
plenty of.
Oh
roles.
Yes, there are plenty of roles. We have lots of roles to fill, and me and John don't want to be reading for all of them. So
that'd be too many. I probably have that many many voices thanks to just perpetual psychosis. But I'd rather not exhaust all those resources.
Yes, that would be great to not do that. But yeah, so you can look up audition information on our social media, or you can just email our audition email at auditions.madartists@gmail.com, or you can email us here at the podcast, banterbox.madartists@gmail.com, with any questions, comments, corrections, or recommendations that we should review in the future.
Now, you're certain those are the correct emails?
Yes, I am certain those are the correct emails, John. I specifically thought about it when I said it. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to go back and edit it, and they're going to be all wrong.
That would be so good.
No, but those are absolutely the right ones. But yeah, so, you know, please leave us a review on whatever, you know, platform you're listening on.
Yes, please leave us a review.
Yes, let us know how we're doing. Let us know what we can do better. And yeah, if you have any requests and would like to come on the podcast or send in questions or audio clips, feel free to do so. You can email us or message us on social media with that. But yeah, so we will see you guys next week, and thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.